Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, Saturday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Fix It is a documentary that delves deeply into the faults of the current healthcare crisis and proposes a single-payer system as a solution. Again, the screening of Fix It will be Saturday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
Prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us as we honor the memory, life, and legacy of Malcolm X.
It is 6:01, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Bread and Roses.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That's almost 38 years. The Bread and Roses Collective always welcomes new collective members, no experience necessary. So if you would like to host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KBOO's volunteer manager, Ani Haynes, at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web at kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, share comments, or show ideas. Also, like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses, and also on Twitter, Bread Roses Radio. I'm your host tonight, Pamela Santos, and our engineer is Krista Maria. Tonight, Bread and Roses welcomes back Unchaste Readers, women reading their minds for a live literary event. This is a reader series that gives voice to their work in front of, we're the only live audience right here. But for you, my captive audience out there in Radioland, the next public reading is Wednesday, February 17th at Literary
Ceremon House.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No.
Thank you. You got me right there. You caught me.
I just wanted to make sure because it can be confusing.
Exactly. So you just heard. founder and curator of the Unchaste Readers series, Jenny Forrester, who has brought together a group of four local writers who will share their words with us. Welcome, Unchaste.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thanks. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to you, Jenny.
Okay, so the reading that's coming up on Wednesday is going to be at Ceremon House. We had a venue change because the reading is going to be a big one. It's going to be Unchaste Reader Series, multi-generational Black women reading their minds. So please do come. The first reader that we're going to have today, we're just going to do kind of a reading as we would in real life. Mm-hmm. Because this is sort of like real life. So the first
but magical.
Reader, yeah, I know, right?
More magic.
We are, actually. We really are. So let me just, can I wax Unchaste for a moment just before? Because we're about 4 years old now, which is stunning to me. And I remember starting it and thinking, well, you know, we'll do it for a year. And so it's still going, and the list is really long for people who want to read, who want to get involved. So I'm kind of seeing that we'll be alive for a while, I hope. Celeste Gurevich grew up in love with nature and language on the Oregon coast. She became a born-again multimedia artist after starting classes at Mount Hood Community College in 2012. She's a student of beloved local writers Tom Spanbauer, Lydia Yuknovich, and Kate Gray, who are helping her braid her woman's story into a novel. Her essays can be found at the Girl God Anthology, excuse me, Whatever Works, Feminists of Faith Speak, and elsewhere. Celeste is also an associate producer of the podcast On the Block with Andrew Gurevich and curator host of the Corporeal Readers Corporeal Writers Reading Series, a showcase for the students of Lydia Yuknovich's seasonal corporeal writing workshops. She and her husband Andrew live in Portland, surrounded by the most supportive literary community on the planet. Please welcome Celeste, go.
Thank you. I'm reading a reworked excerpt from a piece called Becoming My Own Midwife that is on The Manifestation. I learned to survive by quilting myself with breath, blood, and stories. Each panel laden with the tang of salty Pacific air, the long scree of an eagle's call, the million different greens of old growth forests. In another lifetime, I walked barefoot, child toes in love with warm Mother Earth juices. Almost an adult, I carried a boy child in my womb, birthed him so hard and fast, blood vessels burst around my eyes. This day, my body is in flux again, a female body machine heaving itself in fits and starts toward cronehood. And I am ready. I hereby embrace my fragility and see the wonder of it with new eyes. I resolve to recognize my strengths, to pay my blessings forward. Oh, I gotta start this over again. I'm reading off of my phone for the very first time, and of course I just backed out of it. So yay digital technology. Anyway, so I am ready. I hereby embrace my fragility and see the wonder of it with new eyes. I resolve to recognize my strengths, to pay my blessings forward and provide opportunities for others in any way possible. I transmute into power being told that I should dumb myself down the first day of first grade, shamed for being able to read. But I kept reading. Somehow I knew in my cells to just keep reading. Books and nature were better parents to me than my own ever were. I reclaim my experience of being a single mother in a generation of women who watched as social safety nets were yanked out from under our feet. All we wanted was the opportunity to succeed. Empathy and righteous outrage are what held the fabric of me together, helped me to survive being born an intelligent female in this culture. From now on, I state with pride that I have a no-cost library PhD from the Global University of the Self-Educated. Never again will I collapse my vocabulary to make you comfortable. To embrace this new paradigm of me, I'll even accept the very hardest thing.
The death of my mother 25 years ago, her neck snapped in a car crash. A truth so devastating, I am only now able to begin the writing of it. I believe that to embrace our fear, to stare that monster down and not blink, is the only way to create new trajectories for ourselves. It's my new mission statement, and I wouldn't change a thing. Every piece invaluable, even when it breaks you. After all, until you fall enough, how can you lose your fear of falling? All of the pieces, damaged and beautiful alike, are who I am today. Healer, artist, matriarch, storyteller. My spirit stretching wide and then wider, far enough to hold the abundant blessings of this human life. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste. I'm just going to go right into the next reader. Thank you, Celeste. Carrie Seitzinger is the author of the book, Fall Ill Medicine, which was named a 2013 finalist for the Stafford Hall Award for Poetry and Oregon Book Award. She is the co-publisher of Small Doggies Press. She is also the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the online arts and culture magazine, Nailed.
Thank you. I have a couple of poems. The first one is new, not from my book, and it's a wedding poem. One of my friends was pointing out how odd so many of the wedding traditions are, just really. So this is my wedding poem. Such white gauze and lace like powder, salt lines on the body. Everyone has gathered here to watch something I'm not sure I want to show. I refuse the veil, a mask to make my eyes quiet. I refuse the name that makes me belong to, the engraving on the dog tag. And yet I accept him, in waves easing, in petals drying. And here are all our own, touching their hair and towing the grass in circles, looking for distractions in the sun through the thrust pines. When love comes, dancing in time like a glad horse on parade, it is not exactly easy to stare it straight in either eye. Then I have a poem from my book, Follow Medicine, about abortion. It's called Nutshell. Only the size of a walnut, a squirrel claw. He was restless, I was something unknown. The shape of the skull in the ultrasound, familiar pearl onion, you too are life. Never such a sound sadness throughout me. In Portland this autumn, the thunder shakes it the rain out of its skirt like a stork's blood bundle. The landmarks call my name, something insane, something insane. I'll never oatmeal bathe him, mittens over the nails. If I deliver this child, I might lose him in a crowd of liars. Better now to leave him in a cloud of stars. I'll never show him the difference between the American way and dream. I'll never watch a bone come through his mouth. His undeveloped body sticking to me like garlic skins, the limbs, sinew sack of maybe. Every life is a gamble. Soon the cherry blossom petals will be swirling along the pavement like pink wedding rice, as if there are no mistakes.
Carrie, thank you. That's beautiful. Rios de la Luz is a Chicana Chapina living in Oregon. She is brown and proud. She is always working on decolonizing her mind and being louder. She is in love with her Bruja activist communities in LA, San Antonio, and El Paso. Her short story collection, The Pulse Between Dimensions and the Desert, is out now via Ladybox Books. Her work has been featured in Volume 1 Brooklyn, Entropy, the Femme Lit magazine, World Literature Today, and Saint Susia. Please welcome Rios de la Luz.
Hello, thank you. The first piece I'm reading is from my short story collection, Morena. I want to talk about my brown skin. I have to talk about it. My ability to travel through shades and spectrums is incomparable. I don't get red like a frustrated pale walker in the middle of a Macy's. The internet advertises a different price, and things are never easy. I become deeper browns. I become enriched with the blanket of the poor. Those women who wear the coat of bronze as a status symbol of vacations could never sit with me. El Paso, Texas, 1996. Mama preferred uppercase letters when she scribbled into lemon yellow slips of paper. She folded the paper in half and stuffed it into a sweet tangerine. Then, with thin pink thread, she wrapped the little tangerine until you couldn't see its original skin color. She dipped the pink orb into honey, and then dipped the sticky orb into a turquoise bowl filled to the brim with spherical sprinkles. I used to lick my fingers and then dip my hand into the bowl. I pretended they were mini planets, and my body was another dimension for them to rest in. Mama grabbed her stacks of brown paper bags and blew air into them to give them life. When the bags exposed themselves to her, she whispered a secret into them. Mama was the neighborhood bruja. She specialized in love spells. She took the baby tangerines one by one and gave them an individual paper bag to cover their existence. Next, she drove to the river. Through chain-link fencing, I looked over at Mexico as my mama, with all of her strength and a loud groan, threw the paper bags over the two fences. She had to make sure they swam and floated down the river. She watched the soaked specimens submerge and emerge out of the green waters. I never asked about the messages written on the yellow pieces of paper, but something heavy and hollow in my gut told me it was people asking to help to be reconnected with the relatives split open and torn apart by a border.
Thank you so much. So that's three.
And that was so powerful. We are going to be going through each of the readers, taking a break, and just having discussion and wonderful dialogue afterwards. But for you, just in the meantime, we have Beyoncé's Formation. Unless you've been under a rock, you will have known that Beyoncé released this song, all about Black love and power, and also played it and performed it at the Super Bowl. So we just have a little snippet right here.
Haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag, swag.
I see it, I want it, want it. I stunt yellow, want it, want it. I dream it, I work hard, I grind till I own it, own it. I twirl on the middle, albino alligator, Camino with the Cielo, sipping Cuervo with no chill. Sometimes I go out, I go out, I go hard, I go hard.
And this is Bread and Roses. You are listening to the Unchaste Readers. Just for tonight, all of you wonderful listeners don't have to go out there. You can just stay right at home and listen to wonderful writers today. We still have some more readers coming up.
Okay. Kiki Nicole is an agender Black femme poet from Baltimore, Maryland. Their work has been featured on sites such as Voicemail Poems, Drunk in a Midnight Choir, Words Dance, and Bitchtopia, as well as anthologies such as Poems for the Queer Revolution and After Ferguson, in solidarity, from Morning Glory Press. They curate a blog at KikiNicolePoetry.tumblr.com. Welcome, Nikki. Go, Kiki.
Sorry. You.
I just got that. Go.
Because Beyonce just played, I would love to read a short piece that I did. This is Erasure Blackout Poetry of the lyrics from Formation. Bitch, I'm that mess. I'm so possessive with my Negro. I did not come to play with you hoes. I came, bitch, with my Negro hair and Negro nose. All this country, ass, black, I take what's mine. When I say I hate white people, what I mean is I'm tired. What I mean is even breathing has become exhausting. What I mean is the skin keeps laughing at me and I don't know what to do anymore. What I mean is there is always a thunderstorm going on in my throat. What I mean is these hands are never allowed to be soft. What I mean is clenched fist. What I mean is swallowed tongue. What I mean is the mirror keeps saying I mean nothing to my face. What I mean is I get it. I hate me too. What I mean is too heavy. What I mean is I don't know where I come from. What I mean is I keep running to find a home, but I have nowhere to run to. What I mean is there is no home for me but on my back. What I mean is there is no shelter. What I mean is safety is an urban legend I think about when looking at the cracks on the sidewalk. What I mean is sidewalks are usually coffins for dead black bodies. What I mean is this body cannot be a home until it is no longer a threat. What I mean is this body is only good when dead and lying on its back. What I mean is gunshot wound. What I mean is I am lonely in the way the bullet longs for a body. What I mean is my white friends will not feel this ache in their chests. What I mean is grieving is such a lonely condition. What I mean is I think it is my permanent condition. What I mean is I think I have a phantom limb for a heart. What I mean is we die every day. What I mean is I am dying a silent death. What I mean is I am dying every day. What I mean is death. What I mean is tears. What I mean is never enough. What I mean is I will never be enough. What I mean is exactly what I said in the first place. I mean, never mind. It doesn't matter. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank I know you. Everyone wants to applaud or snap. Yeah, thank you very much. So I don't know why I'm reading after you or, you know, all of you, any of you. So if you want to read again, just no. Okay. So here's my bio. Sure.
All right. Jenny Forster has been published in a variety of print and online publications, including Seattle City Arts Magazine, Gobshite Quarterly, Nailed Magazine, Hip Mama Magazine, The Literary Kitchen, Indiana Review, and Columbia Journal. She co-edited the anthology The People's Apocalypse with Ariel Gore and features many Pacific Northwest authors. Her essay, The Confession Jar, was published in the Listen to Your Mother anthology, published by Putnam, 2015. She curates Portland's Unchaste Reader Series.
Thank you. This is called Dolls, maybe. I don't know what it's called. My dolls had jobs. My animals worked too, the way animals do. Work and die in goddamn government and goddamn unions. But there weren't any unions. Just hateful words and children, don't you say God or damn, or a whole list of words with ideas, or there'll be soap on the tongue. My step-grandmother knitted a Barbie jacket and a work shirt like Barbie could have worked in a bank. When I opened the Christmas package, right on top was the stuffiest, plushest brown bear, big, smiling up at me, just fat and smiling, arms wide. I hugged that bear so tight, but then Mom said, "So sorry, honey, but that must be Brian's. Here's yours," and handed me Barbie's bank teller clothes. I cried, even though I knew it was wrong, and Mom didn't get mad the way she usually did when I was ungrateful, which should never have happened according to our mythology. We lived in towns too small to be tourist towns, or they weren't in the right place, hours from freeways. We didn't have places to shop for Colorado spoons and ski area snow globes and Columbines painted on everything before two long jacketed boys poisoned that symbol with their hatred, but that's across the continental divide from where I am from. Later, I got a doll, an American Indian doll, stereotype, single feather headband, bare feet, fringed leather, in a land of reservations and monuments and archaeological digs, and a genocide so bad there was a town called Cortez. I got that doll because I saw a picture in Time magazine of Nadia Comaneci with a doll she got as a tourist to America. And she hugged it like she was a girl still and not an international sensation. I was already a girl. I wanted to be an international sensation. And maybe if I had a doll, that doll, I could be a gymnast too. Even though the coaching was too expensive anyway and I was weak, the coach said, when Mom took all she could and paid for the month of lessons where we drove 60 miles round trip twice a week. She did it because after the divorce and he took all the savings, Dad said through the phone across the miles that dreams take money, and since we didn't have money, I'd never be a gymnast. Mom wanted to prove him wrong because he didn't pay child support and she was strong. But then it turned out that he was kind of right, but not in a right kind of way. He was just accurate, which isn't the same as being right. Mom and I...
Stop it, you. Bad words.
Dreamed and talked about men behind their mothers... My mom and I dreamed and talked about men behind my brother's back. We didn't talk about stereotypes or genocide then, or that Cortez the man had another way to be, choices to make like the rest of us. I remember the holes in my thinking, images untethered by mythology. I remember losing doll clothes and shoes and the distances between towns and dreams. I remember the taste of soap and missing words. Thank you. So, Pamela is out of the room for a moment, so I guess I could just maybe start. I'm not sure what happened, and that's too bad. So, what we usually do at Unchase is we also take a break to socialize because writers have to spend a lot of time alone. And it's nice every once in a while to talk to other writers, talk to other artists, and talk about things that we want to talk about.
This is probably a great time to probably explain. So we heard a little bit. This is live radio, people. So I've talked about it before on the show. I have a son. He's autistic. And in all parts... fun thing about KBOO, you can hear the speakers on all times. And the funniest thing about this, so usually what Leanne Krantz used to do, she used to have this disclaimer in the beginning where she would say how all of us readers, we're going to abide by FCC standards, we're going to be FCC compliant, but if y'all got your kids by the radio... no, this is not, you know, a good time for them to be listening to feminism right this second. But then you can have the talk with them afterwards, whatever. So my son heard the GDs and ran around all the studios to find whoever dropped these GD bombs just to be able to tell you their bad words.
Well, they are.
Correct. Yeah. I I'm just trying to tell, you know, my cis male child to please not police other women's language, but, you know, it's not quite getting there right yet. So that's pretty much a better explanation than what I used to have, which is not on this show. At this one time, I had recorded a podcast. It never happened. And he was always in the background where I was recording. So I would pretend and I said, oh, that's just the Japanese ghost in the background. Pay no mind. Just been haunting me like for days. Pay no mind. So I'm thinking that was a good save. And it's an awesome time for our break, our longer musical break. This is in honor of Black History Month. We are having a Sugar Pie DeSanto. So I'll tell you a little thing about 60s soul singer Sugar Pie DeSanto, who has been singing all the way up until now, is part African-American and Filipino-American, holler. And this song, A Little Bit of Soul, is about to come on. So we just will bless you with a couple of minutes of Sugar Pie.
Got rhythm all in my shoe. Soul from a shot in the blue. Well, come on, baby, come along with me. Get this little taste of soul. I say, get this little taste of soul. Well, before you grow too old, we all can have it. It's a thing that grows. You can come and ask me, cause I'm sure it. I got rhythm where it's supposed to be. If you want to tell me, it's a soul like me. Well, come on, baby, come along. It'll taste so so. You better come on. Come on. Early in the morning, I'm giving you warning. Come on. It's all right. All right. Said, you're my baby, but you're driving me crazy. Come on. Yeah. Yeah.
We're back. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. Tonight we're hosting a live reading by the Unchaste Reader Series, Women Reading Their Minds. You were just listening to our little musical break, Sugar Pie DeSanto, A Little Bit of Soul. And now we get into the real nitty gritty. Also, a party I like. If we could get into, I want to get into every poem here, but how about we even just start off with Jenny, but also everyone chime in kind of about why the series is titled Unchaste.
Okay. So the reason it's Unchaste, I was driving down the road and I was thinking about words, and at the time, Dina Rash Guzman was with me, and we were kind of texting back and forth words, and I wanted something that was very not virginal, and I wanted something that was in your face, and that could be biblical, you know, so that we can go to the source. of patriarchy. And unchaste, if you Google unchaste or if you search unchaste on Facebook, you get our events, and then you get the biblical unchaste. And so
you displaced it.
It's perfect.
You just scooted the biblical definitions to the side, said no, and then we're here.
And I wish I could say I planned that. I was just kind of hoping for that because, you know, we are darned if we do and we're darned if we don't. So we might as well just be who we are and embrace the nature of who we are. And I wanted it to be a women's series for women's voices. And I have undergone quite a lot of education and information as I meet more and more people who are very open with me about words that help and words that hurt. I just try to take it in and not be fragile, but be sensitive and be strong, but not tough.
And no, I just get right into it. We go into before we went on the air, we were talking about that evolution of, you know, originally saying women and women identified, but putting that "and" there was kind of like putting a Berlin Wall there. Right. It's very like no, you're this, and then there's this. And at least being for Bread and Roses, I've only been with Bread and Roses about more than a year. I guess I'm getting to my year now, over a year. And we, looking at the definition, I mean, those 38 years, the most that we can say about it is that the one thing that stayed constant through it is this is a collective of feminist radio activists. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we have women identified, and it used to be other kind of identifiers in there too. But in the course of even just this year alone, kind of changing what we think about how to be inclusive, it meant that we actually had to step it up and listen to people. And it was a guest on one of my shows for a roundtable, something not really, thinking about it too much, the autism roundtable, and one of my guests had said afterwards that I didn't know it was only women identified. I said, no, because they identified as agender. And I said, no, you know, this is a space for you to speak about this, about autism acceptance. And of course, you were welcome here. But if we don't stand by the words that we put, let's say, on the door of the clubhouse, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, everyone's welcome, or this is welcome, this kind of voice is welcome, then you are unintentionally, and you're excluding.
It's been really important to me as I learn and grow, and to be open, so it's almost turning into unchaste is not for men. Yeah. You know,
that's pretty much how I think we've been thinking about Bread and Roses too. Does anybody else want to kind of give their thoughts on this and how they've seen the changes, I guess?
Well, I guess I'll jump in. This is Celeste, by the way. I first started attending Unchaste with my husband and was struck by the kind of the mission statement and nature of what Unchaste, the, you know, the readers, the you know, the Jenny herself, the audience. It's a community that's created that holds safe space for hearing people's voices and stories in a way that is really tangible and extraordinary in kind of the literal sense of the word. And I think it's, you know, it's spreading, it's helped over the course of Unchaste raise a standard for the literary community in this town that I know that I myself taking on organizing reading events have definitely tried to incorporate into my own mission statement. And the way that it is not for men isn't exclusionary. It's about creating that safe space for the nature of the vulnerability and rawness of people getting up on stage and ripping themselves open and offering you their hearts, you know, while they're still beating. And it's really, at times it can be that intense. But I just think it's an incredible gift and was completely honored when Jenny asked me to be a part of it back in September.
Thank you. So the evolution, it's important to me to say I am okay with excluding, like,
men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
I'm okay.
Too. I feel like every space is created for men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so excluding them is not exclusionary. It's just like, it should be done.
Well, thank you. That's actually synopsizing the way that I meant.
Yeah, it just should be done.
It's
personally, as an agender person, agender assigned female birth person, I just hate the word female. Mm. Like, I hate females and males.
Mm.
But also my individual experience with gender and identifying as a person is very personal, and it's really tied into my race. Mm. So I'm perfectly okay with being involved with things that are, you know, just for women, because I do have the experiences of a Black woman, whereas like a white trans person will have they might identify differently, which is like very weird and something that I'm like trying to figure out myself, like why my gender is so tied in with my race. Mm. So if someone called me a Black woman, that would be fine. Like, I have no qualms against it, but I do not think that, like, I do not personally identify just as a woman, which is like, in my head, kind of weird, but maybe not weird.
Fluid.
It's fluid.
I think weird is a societal.
It's weird in the sense that I like to gaslight myself because I was assigned female at birth and I am socialized to make myself smaller and to question myself.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is not fun.
No. It's awful. Yeah, it's horrific. I had this thought about the words female and male. Those words, we used them not very long, but we did use that word. Mm-hmm. And then
for Unchaste?
For Unchaste. Oh. And somebody's, to describe who it was for. And then, but it was very short-lived because somebody, you know, it's amazing how things come across your view. People are kind of like, can you look at this? Can you please read this? So that went away pretty quickly. And it's really interesting to me how once that little thread comes undone from the fabric of your belief system, like all the other little threads, just like pretty soon your fabric is really just a string.
And sometimes that belief system fabric isn't even your belief system as much as it's what you've just, the norm that's been presented to you that you've taken for granted the whole time, that you've never started questioning, and then you start questioning the one little thing and then everything becomes a question, like including how you view yourself or your own identity.
It's
good though, like let's start picking those threads.
It's great.
And I think it makes for the argument that to continue to investigate and pick at, I would say, kind of formally, well, there's preconceptions, but it's almost like you're picking at the stable ground that's underneath you. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do that. I think people sometimes, when I say people, I say, you know, not great people. That's what I mean. But not great people just say, oh, you're being divisive. You're there's a lot of labels that are put on, frankly, fruitful discussion. So I'm going to bring up one thing to take it back to some of our readers today. A lot of the social media messes that I try to stay out of, but it's just around. Portland is just about the whitest city that I've been in. And so when you get these on social media spaces, as much as, I mean, even more so than in real life, because nobody wants to talk about race in real life. But God help, wow, on social media, somebody bringing up real things, talking about white supremacy, talking about the cost of black bodies. I mean, it's the burden and the cost that black and brown bodies take of a lot of state-sanctioned violence, anything to do with race. You get the label, oh, why do you have to be so divisive? Let's all love each other. Let's let's be humanists or whatever, you know, thing people say.
We're all lives matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, not
all lives matter. All lives.
So with your poems, you know, whoever wants to step in, I mean, what do you have to say about at least... Is it just a matter of if my poems are going to upset you, it's not for you? They can't see you nodding, Kiki.
I wanted you to be curious because you haven't said anything. Or is it that...
Oh, God. Not to put you on the spot.
I know, but here I am.
Like, nope, they can't see you.
Well, yeah, I was nodding yes to Pamela in response. Yeah, my writing is not for anyone. It is being spoken to people because, frankly, I don't know how else to potentially make a career out of this if other people don't hear it. And I need validation because I'm a needy baby. But yeah, I write to carve out a space for myself, because those spaces do not exist. They are often, when we do try, this is, yeah, in the recent week, I have a friend and I was a part of this like film series that they were doing, and the audience, all the like participating audience was only black. And then other people were welcome to support the event and whatever, and the art and the discussions outside of attendance, just to create that safe space. And from the conception to the end of it, was just faced with so much anti-blackness here and just so much like, just like, why are you doing this thing that does not directly benefit me? So yeah, that's why I just think that like creating art, like as a person that I am, is political in that sense, that those spaces aren't, they don't exist unless I make them. And they don't flourish unless I'm very assertive in those spaces. So I can't like police myself through my writing. Like, this is my writing, and you just kind of have to take it. And your response is your response, but I'm not responsible for that.
And it's not as if they're doing that to other writers. They're not
right.
Telling whatever background that they are, that is in that.
I've definitely had those experiences with readings. I've had white men come up to me and suggest that I not use Spanish in my work, or yeah, because they didn't understand what I was saying, or you know that. Yeah, I've had just certain kinds of people tell me that my work wasn't. Not necessarily, it wasn't that they were saying that it was bad necessarily, but that it just was,
it's not consumable.
They came up to me to tell me that it wasn't for them. And
that it didn't cater to them.
Right, but quite frankly, I don't care. I mean, when I write, I don't know, I like to think of myself when I was a teenager, you know, like, what did I need at that point in my life? What did I need? So those are the kinds of stories that I try to put out there. And it's never about, never is there an inkling in my mind like, oh, I hope that some random white dude out there is going to enjoy this. I don't care.
You know, Brad and Chad have their own entertainment whenever they can find it. It's okay. Anywhere, I'm sorry. Everywhere. That's really like when I think of white men, I think they're named Brad and Chad.
Hunter.
And yeah, you know, there's like some girls are named Hunter. But anyway, we're going to get on this derailing because I have lots of thoughts on names. Anyway, I think before I, you know, we're incredibly blessed that we not only had enough time for everyone to read and have a little bit of a deconstruct here. So hopefully I get to everyone, but if I don't, you know, I think just the broad strokes of this, in terms of, we're talking about holding space, talking about safe space came up, right? And it seems to me that if you don't hold the space for women to share what is going on with inside of them, they're not going to get that airtime, that that literary like space on the paper. Everybody's nodding, by the way. Yeah. So it's that nodding of just being of. So when I've been at an Unchased event, it's really interesting. When you watch, I'm always watching. I'm from New York. I do people watching. And I see how there's such this respect for when you're having writers up there. And at least from the events that I've been, you have so many different kind of backgrounds. But it's amazing when you see this room full of people just kind of nod their heads kind of silently. Kind of the last one, someone was just like, yeah. probably good to mention, I waited until the end to say this. So I recently, by a complete accident, I would say, was also recently initiated as an Unchased reader in January. So I'm in the pantheon. But I didn't want to. I didn't want to take up too much space since I'm already hosting. We still have time at the end, but I wanted to give enough time for everyone to kind of, I would like to kind of, if you have something to say about this, what would you have to say to listeners out there that want to write, that want to put together their stories together? Do you have anything you want to tell them?
I would suggest coming to an Unchased Readers event.
It's true, though.
Yes. We're at unchasedreaders.com, by the way. We speak our truth into being true to ourselves when we speak it to other people. It seems like it's like this real closed circuit to validate our own experience when we share our experience and we get those nods. Mm-hmm. So please come. And also, if you are interested in reading, get a hold of me, Jenny Forrester.
I would encourage anyone to cultivate a writing practice if they were at all interested or even not even sure if they were interested. Writing for me, especially in my really young life, was my safe place from my family and the many people who parented me or didn't. And it's just such a good way to get to know yourself. So do it. and then I do think that going to readings is important, and that finding a real life community, not just on social media, not just on the internet, it is very encouraging. And yeah, that's my advice.
Well, I would say, in particular, my case was that I had a 15-year writing block that was trauma-induced. And until less than 5 years ago, I literally could not even write a journal entry. And so what my breakthrough gave me was that place to get back to myself, like you just said, Carrie, and discover, continue discovering who I'm becoming. And I have a tagline now that I use that says, stories are the most precious and crucial thing that we have to share with each other. Because I really think that, you know, what happens, that closed circuit that Jenny's talking about for me, I see it as an infinity loop. Because what I take out of myself and hold up and offer to other people gives them permissions, gives them examples in ways that I had of people who take their truth and turn it into art and save their lives and help save other people's lives. And I really am discovering that it's really one of the most crucial things that we can do for ourselves and each other is tell our stories, and because you rewrite the story of yourself for who you are, not the stories that other people have told you about yourself.
All I would have to say is do it. If you want to, if you want to tell your story, please do it. I think Lydia Yuknovich said this in one of the workshops that I took with her, but you're the only one that can tell your story like you. Mm-hmm. Like, you have that perspective. So please, if you want to write, please do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that it's good to remember for anyone who wants to write or writes a little bit, wants to be better or more consistent, is just to be soft with yourself. I also go through a lot of writer's block, and I don't create a lot because I'm going through a lot all the time, and I'm a very small person, and it's exhausting. But you know, you can tell your stories in different ways when you can't write, when you can't like put together a chapbook, when you can't make a zine. You can, like, I tell the world my life through my Facebook statuses. You can, like, document yourself crying on Instagram. You can document, like, your family. You can, like, that's ways of making space for yourself and, like, creating communities and art through your body.
And one last thing, I guess, before we go is just, no one can tell your story but you, but also that this is the one way that I can say this, it actually is okay to do it this way. All of our stories matter. This is the only time that's actually gonna like get it across. But with the caveat that I mean, a lot of what we talk about here is sometimes you still have to recognize that there are people who have been marginalized, who have not had those spaces. Mm-hmm. And just to recognize that you can step back sometimes. Mm-hmm. Please find your power, but also recognize other people's power too. Mm-hmm. And that's the good closing for this, because this is exactly how I've been feeling with everyone here in the studio. Thank you so much to our guests and our wonderful engineer, Krista Maria, who pretty much is just juggling all of this like a pro. And I'm Pamela Santos. Thank you for listening and supporting KBOO. Next week on Bread and Roses, Mary will be back with Kitchen Table Conversations. And I'm going to close out we're just closing it all out. This has been, as usual, a very humbling night to hear everyone tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Good evening. You are listening to KBOO Portland. I'm David Kesters. Coming up next, we have Hard Knock Radio, and then at 8 o'clock, Youth Randominium.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street.